Imagine a post-environmental apocalypse. Most of humanity's been lost, and the Earth is decimated. What's life like for those who survived? What kind of new society would they build? What would they believe in? Novelist Margaret Atwood has written many versions of the future, in novels like The Handmaid's Tale, Oryx and Crake, experimental zombie fiction, and most recently, The Year of the Flood. When the book came out, she talked with Steve Paulson about its characters, members of a religious cult who call themselves God's Gardeners.
Toby, year 25, the year of the flood. In the early morning, Toby climbs up to the rooftop to watch the sunrise. She uses a mop handle for balance. The elevator stopped working some time ago, and the back stairs are slick with damp. If she slips and topples, there won't be anyone to pick her up. As the first heat hits, mist rises from among the swath of trees between her and the derelict city. The air smells faintly of burning, a smell of caramel and tar and rancid barbecues, and the ashy but greasy smell of a garbage dump fire after it's been raining. The abandoned towers in the distance are like the coral of an ancient reef, bleached and colorless, devoid of life. There still is life, however. Birds chirp, sparrows they must be. Their small voices are clear and sharp, nails on glass. There's no longer any sound of traffic to drown them out. Do they notice that quietness, the absence of motors? If so, are they happier? Toby has no idea. Unlike some of the other gardeners, the more wild-eyed or possibly overdosed ones, she has never been under the illusion that she can converse with birds.
Is this a warning to us? Is this just sort of presenting a possible future? I guess I'm wondering sort of where this impulse comes from for you.
I think it comes from the same place that all human creativity comes from. We like to play with our toys. And we do have a lot of toys right now, and we like to play with them both in reality and in imagination. So you might say it's like that, but you could also say it's really a very hopeful book because it's still only a book. So you can close those covers and you can say to yourself, let's keep that book inside those covers rather than letting it out. You might say that, or you might say, well, no one can really predict the future, which is true. There's too many variables, which is also true. One of the big things that we can't predict right now is one of the major determinants of the future, which is the human race. So how we behave now is, in fact, determining the future. But we don't know how we're going to behave, so we can't really predict the future.
Now, there's a lot of biblical imagery in your novel. There's, of course, the flood that's part of the title of your book, the waterless flood, as your characters call it. There are also Adams and Eves, and your sort of central group of characters go by the name the Gardeners.
The God's Gardeners.
The God's Gardeners, yes.
Yes, they are trying to combine science, religion, and nature with somewhat mixed results. And they do have some rather unusual but not completely out of the question interpretations of Scripture that they rely upon. And they also have, of course, every religion has got music, so they've got their own hymns, and they have their own special saints, people they honor, such as Saint Al Gore. He will be a saint in the future, you'll be happy to know.
And as well as Rachel Carson and
Rachel Carson
Mahatma
is definitely,
Gandhi.
They're all very saintly, and Diane Fossey is a saint, and some people you might not expect, such as Robert Burns, he gets to be a saint because of his empathy with mice. And this group lives on rooftops in slums where they grow vegetables and where everything recycled. They're vegetarian unless they get really, really, really hungry, at which point you're supposed to start at the bottom of the food chain.
How did you come up with this idea of God's gardeners?
I think that we're going there. That is, I think that the environmental movement has a lot of characteristics of a religion right now. So I think that's already happening. There is already a Green Bible. I found this out after I finished the book, but there is one. You can get one if you want. It has an introduction by Archbishop Tutu. It's got the green parts in green. It's got helpful green things at the end that you can do to be a greener and more virtuous person. So it's moving that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, the gardeners in your book also have a hymn book. And, in fact, every
yes,
few chapters you give us one of their hymns. What was your idea behind this, actually creating all these hymns that form, to some degree, the backbone of the book?
I think they would have hymns. As I was looking through the standard hymn book on two recent occasions, namely the funeral of my father and the funeral of my mother, for hymns that would be suitable, by which I mean they would have approved of them and the rest of the family would also be able to deal with them, there wasn't much on these themes. There isn't actually much in the hymn book that has to do with the rest of the world, with the natural world. There's a few of them, but not really a lot. So my hymns are in standard hymn forms. They're just on subjects that are maybe a little off the beaten track for the hymns of today.
My body is my earthly ark. It's proof against the flood. It holds all creatures in its heart and knows that they are good.
Well, you also have a note at the very end of your book saying that these gardeners' hymns could be used for amateur, devotional, or environmental purposes.
Anybody who wants to use them is welcome to do it. The sheet music is up there on the web, too, so you can pull off, for instance, the Pollination Day song. Sing it at your harvest festival. It's very nice.
It sounds like you had a lot of fun basically creating a new religion.
Well, I didn't try to make it a perfect religion, because none of them are. But I did try to make it a plausible religion. That is, you know, Groucho Marx's old line, I wouldn't want to belong to a club that would have me for a member. So I'm not sure that I would totally want to belong with these people, because they're pretty severe in some areas. The clothing is not very attractive, because they make it all out of recycles and they dye it in dark colors so they won't have to wash it so much. But their general orientation, I think, is pretty worthy.
Margaret Atwood's novel is The Year of the Flood. Steve Paulson spoke with her. You're listening to one of the hymns from the novel called The Earth Forgives.
The earth forgives the miner's blast that rends her crust and burns her skin. The centuries bring trees again and water and fish therein.
I'm Jim Fleming. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.